This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 186. Today, CJ and I are going to do a little geek out on home automation, recorded live March the 24th, 2017.
ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 5 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check us out at ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
Good afternoon, CJ.
How you doing?
I guess it's morning. My bad.
It is for me.
It still is technically for me. Doing pretty good, man. How are you?
Very well. Very well indeed. It's classic Seattle winter weather right now. It's supposed to be spring, but it's raining.
Oh, man. So I'm like, it's warm over here in Florida, and I've got to be out in your neck of the woods next week. So you're telling me that I should bundle up a bit?
A little. It's not that cold. It's just a bit rainy right now.
Well, yeah, but that's called Seattle, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's very green as well. Like, it's nice.
Hey, before we get too far into this, I do want to do one special call out here. We mentioned this on our Facebook page the other day, or about a week or so ago, but we've been playing the same music on our podcast really from the get-go. Actually, I think I switched it up a bit at one time and used...
That was a long time ago, though.
Yeah, I used some music from a real licensed artist, and then we posted a couple of our shows to YouTube, and YouTube ripped off the shows because they said that, hey, you're copyright infringement. I'm like, really? We're just doing a few seconds. So no, that was the newbie noobs. Side of me.
Yeah, noobs, a lot of us.
But as you guys heard when the show started, the music was very different, and that is because there's a guy by the name of Keith Ritchie, who is a good friend of ours, mm-hmm. who works, well, he worked for Microsoft, and then he didn't work for Microsoft, and now he works for Microsoft again. He's one of the, I've known him for 14 years now. He was a level 3 escalation engineer when I had a massive SharePoint outage years ago.
Yeah, if Jeff Tepper is the grandfather of SharePoint, Keith is like the godfather of SharePoint.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I spent some time on the phone with him. Anyway, so Keith has, what he does in his spare time or what he does for fun is he makes his own music. And he's, the music that he makes is mostly, I don't really know how to describe it. I think it's perfect work music. I love his stuff because it's very instrumental. There's no lyrics in it. He's done a couple things for films and such. And I asked him, I was like, hey, would you be interested in doing this for the show? And he was like, absolutely. So he came up with an awesome clip that he mixed, totally made it himself. That's what you're hearing on the show now. So there is no more Monk Turner in the background. This is all Keith Ritchie. And in our outro of the show, we will have information in the show notes. We will have information on where you can go find more of his music. I'm a very big fan of it. I love it. You should go check it out. It's good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. It's nice to, we haven't really done anything with the music on the show for a while, as you said, and what a great opportunity to switch things up a little bit.
Yeah.
And really great to have Keith helping us out with the show like that.
Absolutely. Totally agree. So, Keith, thank you very much. And everyone that's listening to the show, please head over and let Keith know. We'll have his contact information in the show notes as well so that you can find him, you can tweet him, you can Facebook him, you can show up at his doorstep and send him a coffee, all kinds of stuff.
He loves that.
Sorry, Keith, we won't send him to your doorstep. Unless they have gobs of money to buy your music, then you might accept it.
Then you'll have personal visits, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess, hey, you want to help out the podcast? Do me a favor, go buy one of Keith's albums. He's also got a Kickstarter right now that's running. Please go buy one of his albums. That's a great way to support the show because he donated this music to the show. So he was very kind to do that. We're giving him a good call out, and you will now hear him get credits at the end of every single episode going further.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning his website now if people are interested is music.kritchie.com and you can go and check out more of his work and background and all that sort of stuff there.
Yeah, it's cool. You follow him on Facebook. He does Facebook Lives when he's mixing his music. It's real. I love to watch him. He's sitting there working. You see him thinking. I'm like, man, if you did that for me, you'd have me slamming the desk and throwing stuff around. Sometimes I'm trying to develop, working this morning on some stuff. But any rate.
I have a funny little side story. When I really early on at Microsoft, when I joined in 2002, I came over for a conference they called Tech Ready. I think it was in 2004 or something. Anyway, they have Tech Ready. It's an internal tech conference at Microsoft. And I came over and I was hanging out at the attendee party at the bar or close to the bar or something like that. And I ran into Keith, and he may not remember this. I ran into him and I was like, OMFG, it's Keith Ritchie. And I just had the most like total embarrassing groupie moment known to mankind. And it was because he was very instrumental in those days in SharePoint and what I was working on from New Zealand at the time. And he was one of the escalation guys in the SharePoint team then. And I just had this like, oh my God, this guy knows everything. And I just had one of those total like groupie moments. It was pretty funny.
You know, it's fun. I'll give you mine. So I was working for a Fortune 300 back in 2006 or seven, something like that. I think so, somewhere around there. I was responsible for kind of running I was the main developer on our corporate intranet and corporate internet site. And that was SharePoint Portal Server 2003 at the time. And we had run into an issue where we could back up our site, but we could not restore. Restores would not work. And we were in a state like that for about 6 months. We were assured by Microsoft that the backups were good, but we could not figure out what was going on with our restores. So I was on the phone with him multiple times with him. That's how I met Chris Gideon. Both those guys were on the call, and I will never forget the day. I'm sorry if this offends anybody, but I'll never forget the day we were on the call. And Keith said, well, here's what I'm going to need you to do. I'm going to need you to take a dump and send it over to me so I can pick through it. I'm like, it's one of the first times I had heard that phrase as a developer. And of course, you know, if you're not a developer, taking a dump, it means I'm taking a memory dump or an extract of the memory. And then when you want to pick through the dump, it's the entire heap stack of memory that you can see all the stuff. It's basically a snapshot of the scene of the crime. And
yeah.
But when it's just one of those funny developer things. Yep, I'm going to take a dump and send it over so I can pick through it and figure out what's wrong with you.
I have a friend who works in science that does that for a living, but a different kind of dump. Yeah. Anyway,
so hey, CJ, what have you been up to?
Oh, we're in crush mode at the moment. We're trying to get a release out for the end of the month, a big new set of features for us. And so we're just trying to get all those tidied up and out the door. So it's meant some late nights and some code crunching and pizza evenings and things like that. We're trying to get it all wrapped up. So that's what I've been working on. How about you? You got a big release coming up too.
I do. After sitting on the beach for a week in Mexico, I came back and I was going to launch the week before and realized that even right now I'm realizing how good of an idea it was to postpone it. But by the time this show comes out, assuming things go well, we will be live with the first bundle of our Mastering the SharePoint Framework development course from Voitanos. And so
nice.
I'm hoping to do like a little soft launch this weekend and then launch it big later this week. And it's
how do people get that? What do people do?
Thank you. If you go to voitanos.io, that's VOTIONS.io. If you go there, you will find it's pretty obvious. There's only two courses that we offer. One is the email course, and then one is the video course. Now, this, just to preface it, it's all about SharePoint Framework. It's all for developers. It is 100% free. And the way I'm doing this course is I'm offering it in three different bundles, a starter edition, a fundamentals bundle, a starter bundle, a fundamentals bundle, and an ultimate bundle. The fundamentals and ultimate bundles, you'll have to pay for those, but I'm releasing the starter bundle. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm releasing that for free. You'd still have to go through the process of quote unquote buying it, but for $0.
Gotcha.
Just a little secret. I'm trying to test out my e-commerce stuff without having to collect any money.
Gotcha.
But
I'm just doing 1 cent.
Yeah. So for everybody, I mean, if you're interested in doing it, I mean, just I want to make sure I set the expectation that you will not learn how to build a web part using the SharePoint framework in the starter bundle. It is simply a understanding what the framework is, seeing a quick demo on it, and then getting your environment set up. So I wanted to give that away for free because I see that's a big thing that people are having a challenge with. And frankly, you get to see what the style of the course is like and see if it's for you. So
cool. That's really exciting. I'm very I don't want to sound too soppy, but kind of proud you're getting to this point. It's awesome.
It is. I appreciate that. This has taken longer than I expected. I was hoping to publish things earlier, but I decided to hold off when I saw so many things changing underfoot. And quite frankly, I just don't have the resources to have to record everything and then turn right around and have to re-record it. So I sat on stuff until GA came out and just kind of planned and everything. And like everything, you know, right before you go live with the launch, you realize there's so much other stuff that you needed to get done that you didn't do yet. So
yeah, fair enough.
We're doing a complete website refresh and all that stuff all at the same time. So
lots. Well, I've been following you behind the scenes. You know, we've been yapping about it a bit over the last few months, and it's a hell of a lot of work. So really nice work getting it to the finish line.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. So today we got some fun stuff that we're going to talk about. This is a geek out. So, but before we do our geek out on home automation, we're going to want to do a quick little sponsor call out here and make sure we can pay the bills. So here I'd like to introduce one of our sponsors and let them take it away.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. Are you interested in all things happening in Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, BI, SharePoint, or .NET? Look them up on valid.nl.
All right, CJ, I have a question for you.
Ooh, go ahead.
So I'm interested in dipping my toes into this whole home automation thing. And I know you've touched on it a little bit.
Yeah, dipping your toes. There's no such thing.
Yeah, well, I mean,
you know, might as well just jump in at the deep end, buddy.
So let me tell you why. I'm going to out myself on this. This is really bad. And I asked you guys this on Twitter when I got back from Mexico. I don't know if you noticed this. I asked you like the day I got back.
Yeah.
I'd like to share with you what the inspiration of the question was.
Okay.
I came home and I noticed that we had left our coffee pot on for a week.
Oh, whoops.
So nothing was on the coffee pot. It was the morning we left early in the morning. I cleaned it and everything and put it out to dry and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it was sitting there with nothing in it, no grounds, no pot, no nothing. It's just the little plate. Just the hot plate was sitting there on for a week while we were out of town.
I thought they had like safety things, those coffee machines.
Not this one.
Oh, wow. Gotcha.
So I am highly motivated and I've always wanted to find a way to, you know, I like the ones where you can have it start before you wake up. So when you get down, your coffee's ready. So I asked you and a couple other people, Scott Hogue and a few other ones on Twitter, hey, what would you suggest getting into it? Now, I know that you've done some stuff with home automation and I've got a ton of questions around it. And so we thought that, hey, it'd be kind of fun for you and I to, I kind of like ask you questions to interview you and you share what you've done, but then you can also kind of, you know, we can riff a bit and for our listeners figure out what this stuff is. So let me ask you, what have you done home automation wise in your house? How are you set up?
Okay, so much like you, mine started with the coffee pot. Hi, my name's Chris. I'm a caffeine addict. I've been addicted ever since I've had children. But now I can turn my coffee pot on before I get up. I no longer have a problem.
Nice.
So, it started with coffee. And like you, I wanted to dip my toes in the water. And I just wanted to get that thing to turn on about 40 minutes before I got up, because my coffee machine's a little different. It's an espresso machine, and it's a big one, and it's full of brass and copper and all this sort of stuff, and it needs to warm up, and it takes a long time. And so I valued that time, and I didn't want to get up and turn it on. I wanted it to be all nice and toasty for when I got up, ready to make me some coffee. So I started investigating it, and things sort of spiraled out of control from there. So I thought, oh, okay, I'll just get one of those plug-in socket thingies that I can, you know, it has an app on my phone and I can add a timer for it. And I started looking into it more and I decided what I really wanted to do was do some lights and the coffee machine at the same time in the kitchen so that, you know, I could turn on lights when it's dark in the morning, things would come on automatically, coffee machine would be ready and away we go. And so when I started looking at the light situation, I wanted to control, you know, built-in lights, not plug into the wall type ones like ceiling lights and stuff.
Right.
And so
like wall switch, with the ones with the wall switch.
Exactly, wall switched based lights, right? So it kind of went from there and I decided to start dabbling with replacing some of the light switches with ones that I could control. And there are basically a bunch of different options in the space, right? There's kind of three main categories, right? There's ultra proprietary, some standards-based protocol based switches and devices. And then there's kind of what I call like Wi-Fi controlled stuff. And I knew I didn't want Wi-Fi controlled stuff because I wanted them to all work together, not be dependent on my router, Wi-Fi running. And quite frankly, Wi-Fi is just pretty poor. What was really important to me was high Wi-Fi acceptance factor. Because if I started doing these sorts of things, and Vicky was like, I can't use the house anymore, then my life was going to be misery. So
yeah. I think the only people that doesn't apply to are single.
Yeah, Yeah, they may stay single if you can't use the house. But anyway.
Or soon to be single.
Yeah. And the other thing is, in terms of the wife acceptance factor or the spouse acceptance factor, I should say, things didn't, I wanted them to be pretty much the same. So I wanted the light switches to be the same. I didn't want like big dongly things sticking out of the wall for plugs and stuff like that. And so kind of partially, it was surreptitiously starting to replace things in our house without the wife necessarily even knowing until her life magically got a whole lot better because I could automate a bunch of things. So that's kind of how it all started anyway. But now I have a bunch of power sockets in the wall that are controlled for various things. I've got a lot of our light switches have been replaced with ones for automation. And then I've kind of extended it. Now I've kind of gone one step further and said, not just the light switches and the sockets, but now I can control our home AV gear, like our TV, things like that. And then I've got Alexa all hooked up to it all. So control the whole thing.
So you went through three different options there. You talked about the ultra proprietary, and there was like a middle one, and then you talked about the Wi-Fi. So the Wi-Fi one you didn't do. What was the, which one of those two directions did you go?
I went the middle one, which was the standards-based kind of approach. And so there's really a couple of, there's a few standards in this area, but the real popular ones are called Z-Wave and Zigbee. And they are basically two wireless protocols for communication between devices. The good thing about it is that there are a bunch of people that make or a bunch of companies that make different devices that all speak those same standards. So you could go buy a GE light switch or and then couple it with a motion detector made by somebody else, right? And they would still work. Like it's all Z-Wave. And so you could pick and choose devices based on your needs and which ones you like better. And you're not stuck with one brand.
Okay, that makes... Okay, so the devices then, they understand a certain protocol. It's kind of like we all buy laptops, they understand, they have a network card on them, they understand how to do TCP/IP, so we don't have to have a special laptop to get connected to this special network.
Exactly. Yeah, they've all got a 802.11 Wi-Fi card that, you know, speaks Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Although that can be dubious at times. But same sort of concept,
We'll have links to those two different protocols. You said it was Zigbee and Z-Wave.
Yeah, Zigbee and Z-Wave.
Okay, so when you do that then, I've seen different things about then how you go about controlling them. I heard you say... You've got things hooked up with Alexa. I know you've got a nice Harmony remote set up, but you've got things set up there as well. I've also seen people talk about using something like Zapier or using, like if you have an iPhone, there's, I think it's called HomeKit, I think.
Yep, HomeKit. Yep.
Yeah, I think that there's, this kind of comes down to a style kind of preference on how you best interact with stuff. I mean, I have a, my house, we have an Alexa, but we have an Amazon Echo. We have Alexa, but the only thing we use it for really is music, playing music and stuff. We don't use it for automation stuff. My wife and I, my kids, we're not really voice controlled kind of people. And that's a style thing. That's not a slam on the technology. What I wonder is, what options do you have? If you go with one of those two technologies, do all of these other ones that are out there, are you generally in a good shape there? Or you have to be like when we went through the whole cutting the cord thing, I feel like I had to line up. It's like putting a laptop or putting a new computer together. You got to make sure that you get the right memory for this motherboard, you get the right CPU for this motherboard, you get the right connections and the power supply and everything. And it's one of those, you want to get it all at once, but you got to be real careful because if one thing doesn't work, then it's like it could trickle down and, you know, next thing you know, you're building a second machine.
Yeah, that is really annoying aspect to all of this, right? Is that there are a lot of different options that you can go with. Like you mentioned, HomeKit. Then there's a bunch from other proprietary vendors like Wemo from Belkin, for example, stuff like that. So I went with the Zigbee and Z-Wave networky kind of networked device option because of the multiple manufacturers and also because of the controllers that you use to control those devices. You can also get controllers from different companies for Z-Wave, for example. Like Logitech put out a Z-Wave home automation hub that connects with their Harmony hub and things like that. I went with the Samsung SmartThings hub, which is a Zigbee and Z-Wave automation hub, just because of the ecosystem around it. There are a lot of people that have built different plugins for it, different scripts for it, for doing different automation tasks, all that sort of stuff. And so the support around it was pretty good. And you can connect a bunch of different devices to it over Z-Wave. So although there are some products you can't go out and buy and connect it up with, pretty much anything that talks Z-Wave will connect with it. And so I thought that was kind of the safest bet from a openness point of view and being able to connect all the things, right? So I started with a socket, a power socket in the wall, a Z-Wave power socket to control my coffee machine, and a Z-Wave light switch to control kitchen lights, and a Samsung SmartThings hub, which was the Z-Wave hub, which is the thing that you connect to your network to your internet network, you know, to your internet connection or your home network that lets you control those things, right? So they don't connect to the internet directly. They connect through this hub, and the hub connects to your network. And the reason that's good is because if your Wi-Fi is down for whatever reason or your internet is down, things can continue to keep working because the Z-Wave network's kind of isolated and by itself.
So with the Z-Wave network then, so you, it's almost like you have like a separate little like home automation network.
Yeah, a little hub.
That's connected. So you have a hub that's connected to your network then. So when you're home and you want to go, when you want to make changes to it and everything, are you connecting to it from your phone or from Alexa to the hub, or are you going to the internet? And then that's one question. The other thing is, what's doing all of the controlling? Like what's got the, what has the quote unquote, that I'm putting in air quotes,
the brains.
What's got the database and all the schedules and stuff like that?
Yeah. I can speak from the SmartThings point of view because I'm not sure how some of the other hubs work in this regard, but with the SmartThings, what happens is you obviously install the hub and connect the devices to it. You pair the devices. And the way Z-Wave works is it's a mesh network. So if you have the hub kind of in one part of your house, so long as it's within range of one of the switches, and that switch is within one of the is within range of the next switch, you can cover your entire house that way, right?
Okay.
So not everything is talking directly back to the hub. It sort of leapfrogs through other switches and devices that act as Z-Wave repeaters. Anyway, so everything talks back to that hub. Then you could decide how to talk to your devices, right? And you could either do that off your from your phone with an with a SmartThings application, or you could talk to it through the SmartThings website that you can log into. And you can log into the SmartThings website. You could see all of your devices. You could see all of the automation things that you've got set up. And you could kind of manage it all like that as well. And so you've got, choices in that regard. You can get access over the internet through both of those mechanisms as well. So from your phone while you're out of the house, it'll connect through Samsung's SmartThings site and then into your hub and then into your house. So you can do it from anywhere on the globe.
So let me ask you another question then. Let's say, for instance, that you got a babysitter that's come in the house. You and Vicky have gone out to dinner and they're in the house and they want to turn the lights on in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So how much of it is... How easy is it to go through and to override it to where do you have to provide, first of all, how easy is it to override something? Then second of all, does it screw up your controls there? So like, for instance, when I say home automation, I know part of the answer to this, but I'm just going to be explicit for our listeners. If I have something that automates the light switch, is there like a servo inside that little thing that actually flips the light switch up and down so that if I come back to the light switch and I turn it off, it doesn't know that it's off. It still thinks that it's on?
Yeah, gotcha. No, it knows that it's off.
Okay.
So what happens is, so the light switches, the reason I chose in-wall light switches and not to replace with like Wi-Fi controlled bulbs, for example, was for this exact reason. And so I wanted to make sure that when somebody was in the house that wasn't a techie, that didn't have the phone app on their phone, that didn't have a computer there or whatever, could still use the house as if it was just a normal house with no automation, right? So they could walk up and flip the light switch back and forth as often as they like, and it'll work just like a light. Like it's a light, right? Those light switches know what state they're in and they communicate back with the hub. So when you turn it off, the hub knows it's off. When you turn it on, the hub knows it's on. And then the hub can obviously control whether it should switch that state to on or off, right? And it's got a little relay in the light switch that does that. But the hub is smart and it knows when somebody's turned the light switch on and off. The reason I wanted it like that, I mentioned, but the problem with the Wi-Fi controlled light bulbs, for example, is you got to leave them powered on, right? Mm. You've got to have the switch on the wall turned on all the time, or the light switch isn't connected to your Wi-Fi network and you can't control it, right? And so if somebody switches it off, you're kind of hosed and you lose that concept of state and things like that because your network no longer knows what that light bulb is or where it is and whether it's on or off. So anyway, that's why I went for the failing everything, you can just switch the light switch on and off like a normal light switch. Hmm. And then the hub has concepts of, you know, it knows what state all those things are in. So when I open the SmartThings app on my phone, I can say, oh, look, the kitchen lights are on. Somebody must have done that. Now, to your question about the babysitter, that's a really interesting one because overriding things is really important, right? If you've got automations like turn all the lights off at 10 p.m., for example, or whatever time, and you go out and you have a babysitter there, you obviously don't want all the lights in the house to go off while the babysitter's there, turn off the TV, do all that sort of stuff. So Samsung has this, or SmartThings has this concept of modes. So you could be in I'm at home mode, or it's night mode, or I'm on vacation mode. And those can dictate, or babysitter mode, right? Mm. And so you can have different modes that dictate which automations should run in which modes. So we have a vacation mode, right? And so when we go away on vacation, we switch it to vacation mode. And that will mean that our automations are different. So the coffee machine no longer goes on. The lights do automations at different times of the day that we want them on and off at, that sort of thing. If we detect motion, we have a few motion detectors around the house. If we detect motion, it will send us alerts on our phones and things like that. That's what happens in vacation mode. In babysitter mode, we basically just turn off all the automations and the lights stay on till we get home. And when we'd switch it back to go to bed mode or night mode or whatever.
And so when you get home from being out and babysitter goes home, you just switch back to home mode and it just picks up where it was. So if it was supposed to do, if you get home at 10 o'clock at night and you had something set up to kick in at 10:15, then regardless of what state they're in, it just kind of picks up where it left off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But automations can be smarter than that. So we have, because we have a motion detector downstairs, we can do automations that say things like, after 10:30 at night, if you haven't detected any motion for 20 minutes, turn the lights off.
Oh, and that's a smart thing. That's the Samsung hub.
Yeah. And the motion detector connects to it's a Z-Wave motion detector. In smart things, you can set up a thing to say, if you haven't detected motion for more than X period of time, then turn these other things off. And so it's not like on the dot of 10 o'clock or 10:30 or whatever each night, everything in the house goes off. It's kind of a bit smarter than that about what you're doing at the time. So it's not quite as, you can of course do it on the dot of 10:30 if you want. We do it with motion detectors. It's also able to do things like turn lights on at sunset or sunrise or sunset, for example. So lights on the outside of the house go on at sunset and turn off at 11 or something like that. So triggering things can be a little smarter than that.
I got you. Well, hey, I got a few more questions for you, but before we do that, let's cut in for another one of our sponsors have a say on some stuff real quick.
While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as the leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more.
Okay, so I have another question for you. What has been like the coolest thing as you've gotten into this? What's probably been the most fun thing that you've done or that you've heard people doing that was like on your list?
Okay, there's two things. One is purely selfish and the other one is just hilarious, right? So the purely selfish one that I like is previously, I was automating things based on times, right? So like first thing in the morning, you know, 6:30 or 6:15 in the morning, turn on the kitchen lights and turn on the coffee machine, right? Now I'm doing things like after 6 a.m., when it detects motion in our bathroom upstairs, right, in our master bathroom, then start automation downstairs, right? So my wife was like, what the hell are you doing putting motion detector in our bathroom? There's a whole lot of jokes you could make about that. But anyway, but it's turned out to be really cool, you know, so that when I get up in the morning, things just start happening. Because the first thing you do in the morning is you get out of bed, you walk into the bathroom and you go have a shower, right? So it now detects motion and starts this kind of the day off, right? It switch modes in the house, which in turn will start lights and do coffee machine things and all that sort of, it start the Sonos and all that sort of stuff downstairs. And so purely selfish one, that's probably the coolest one that I've enjoyed recently. From a hilarious point of view, it's hooking up Alexa with our audio and video gear, right? So SmartThings has the ability to hook into Alexa. So you can control your SmartThings automations and devices from Alexa. So for example, you could say, Alexa, turn on the patio lights. And turn on the lights outside, or Alexa, turn on the coffee machine, right? And at first you think, man, that's lazy, right? You could just reach over and hit a switch. But when you're sitting in the kitchen cooking, or you've got your hands full of something, or you've come home and you're carrying the shopping or whatever, it's actually quite convenient to be able to call out to Alexa and say, hey, Alexa, turn on the lights or something like that, which is kind of useful. So, but the hilarious part is the Harmony Hub that we have, which is the hub that allows you to do control of multiple AV type devices like TV, your receiver, your you know, stereo gear and all that sort of stuff, can also hook in to Alexa. So now I've got, we let our kids watch a very small amount of television right before dinner. And, you know, because it's while Vicky's getting stuff ready and, you know, I get home and all that sort of stuff. So they watch a small amount of TV before dinner and then they come through for dinner. And so the first thing I do when I walk through from the garage into the kitchen, I'll look at the watch and I'll say, hey, Alexa, turn off the TV. And, you know, because I call watching TV plugging our kids into the matrix. Yeah. It's like they suddenly go limp and jelly-like.
Oh, yeah.
And totally zoned out. And, of course, I get home and I want to talk to them and see them, right? So I walk in and go, hey, Alexa, turn off the TV. And suddenly just the shrieking from the lounge. I don't know. It really entertains me for some reason. It cracks me up. So, yeah, I find that absolutely hilarious. So, yeah, that's the latest sort of hilarious automation that I've got is it goes from Alexa to the Harmony Hub, which in turn uses infrared blasting to turn off the stereo and turn off the television and things like that.
I gotcha. That's cool.
Yeah, and you can use it to change channels. You could use it to turn things on and off, stuff like that. Then I've got small things like when I use the Harmony Hub to turn on the TV, it'll turn on the television and then talk to smart things and say, turn off the lights above the television. So it sort of dims the lights above the TV for viewing. Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, hey, I got a question for you then. So as somebody who wants to get into this, right, when I first started looking into it, that I just got swamped and I was like, oh my God, where do I?
Yeah, so many choices.
Yeah, this was helpful for me. And I found the same problem when I started doing the cutting the cord thing, which once I did the research, figured it out, I was like, okay, now I got it. Someone's got to write the blog post. Hey, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So, which actually is pretty cool. All the stuff I did on the cutting the cord thing, I actually put the little Amazon Associates links for all the things that I bought.
Mm.
Just got a nice little gift card. So everybody went to my blog and actually bought stuff and follow what I did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice. It'll buy me two coffees. Anyway, so the question I have for you is, where would you point people, aside from this podcast episode, where would you point people if they've made it this far in the episode and they're curious about getting into a little bit more of this stuff? I mean, there's, I'm sure, tons of resources that are out there, but what were the ones that you found that were good either as like community places to ask questions or to do research or something like that? Or have you found any?
Yeah, actually, you know, of all places, Reddit is pretty good for this. So there's a really good home automation and smart things, you know, subreddits there that are pretty good at talking about, you know, different types of devices and what works with what and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, one piece of advice I'd give to people out of all of this that I see a lot of people fall into is they buy one device first, right? Mm-hmm. And they go see it at the store or whatever, and it's some plug and then it connects with their phone and all that. But I would just be really hesitant about that and think through a little bit longer term, because chances are you're going to buy, your first thing that you buy is not going to work with the second thing that you buy or the 10th thing that you go buy. And so picking an ecosystem is kind of important, but if you are keen to do it, then I wouldn't just rush out and buy the first Wi-Fi controlled light switch or bulb or whatever, because it has sort of downstream ramifications. And instead, try to think about how far you want to go with it first up and try to think about that longer term, because you'll end up buying things that you just end up having to replace otherwise. Because it's kind of a big craze going on right now, and everybody's got their own apps and their own devices, and some of those things don't work together.
It's a lot of flailing.
Yeah, but the option I went down was a bit more of a techie route with the Z-Wave devices and the hub, but a little bit of upfront investment for the hub, which is like, you know, they range from anywhere from $70 to $120, is definitely worth it, because you can keep adding things to it. You don't end up with 50 different remotes and light switches that, if somebody switches the light switch off, your lights will no longer work and stuff like that. So definitely worth thinking about a little bit up front.
Cool. Well, hey, this has been very helpful for me. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me and our listeners about this stuff today.
Yeah,
well,
I held off a long time, but I thoroughly enjoy it. And people think, man, this sounds completely pointless. And it kind of is, but you don't need any of this in your life, really. Nobody needs any of this, right? But it certainly is pretty fun to do. And you end up coming with these automations that you think, man, that's actually really helpful. So it's not as nutty as it sounds.
Yeah. That's cool. Very cool. Hey, so you got any picks for us this week?
Yes. It's kind of along the home automation lines, actually, kind of vaguely related. So I run this Wi-Fi system in my house called Unify, which is from Ubiquiti. It's the best sort of prosumer Wi-Fi system that I found that does, you know, mesh networking of things. I've added a thing called a cloud key to it. So I started with one access point. I've now got three in the house for covering different areas and different strengths and all that sort of stuff. They all talk together. But one of the things they do is they have this thing called a controller, which is a piece of software where you can see how your network's doing. You can see all the devices on your network really well across your whole network and sort of manage things nicely, right? There's this thing they built called a cloud key, which I added to the network this week, which is basically like a little mini computer. It's kind of like a Raspberry Pi in a case, right? Runs some version of Linux or some description. But anyway, so you plug that into the network, the controller runs on that computer, and then you can get to it from anywhere on the internet. So you can log into your home network remotely. You can see all the devices. You can reboot things if you want. You can configure stuff. And I thought that was really cool. Like being able to go monitor these things and manage them remotely is really nice. So, you know, when the missus calls up and says, hey, my computer can't connect to the network, you could go in and figure out why.
Oh, that's nice. God, that's really nice.
And it's more than just, how about you just go pull the power of the router and plug it back in. You can get in there and actually see what's going on. So that's really helpful.
I've got an Amazon shopping list with about $900 of Ubiquiti stuff in there, cloud keys in there as well. And it's it's on the, I'm not allowed to get that right now, but yeah, it's definitely, I definitely want to upgrade to Ubiquiti.
As a geek, it's pretty fun. It's kind of like enterprise Wi-Fi and networking, but sort of more prosumer level. Got a lot of the same features though. It's really, really cool.
Gotcha.
How about you? What have you got a pick for us?
I do. I have one or two here, and they're going to be around containery kind of stuff. So the other day, or a couple weeks ago, Google had their, it's like their, if Microsoft was going to have a build conference that's just for Azure, Google had theirs for the Google Cloud Platform, GCP, in the same venue where Microsoft does build. It was called Google Cloud Next or something like that.
Yeah, Next. Yeah, gotcha.
So I grabbed a bunch of the videos, was watching a bunch of stuff. It was very, very cool, very impressive stuff that they were showing. But I was listening to one of the podcasts that came out of it, and a guy referenced this lab site that they have. So this isn't me trying to push everybody over to Google Cloud Platform, but I've been interested, I know you are too, about getting into Kubernetes and playing a bit more with Kubernetes and using it for a bunch of utility type stuff. But I'm not really in the mode of really of wanting to maintain my own cluster and all that stuff. I really just want to use containers as a service. And no one really offers that except for Google. They do that with their Google Container Engine. And they do it with Kubernetes. And well, I was listening to a little podcast and talking about how do I get ramped up on this. And someone mentioned a site called codelabs.developers.google.com, which is basically a collection of all of these labs that are all web-based that you can run through to try out different Google technologies, from Android to working with analytics to working with tags and stuff like search tags and stuff. And one of the sections I saw is you can actually filter it and say, just show me stuff that's related to cloud. And there's a lot of really good Kubernetes things that were in there, including using the difference between using Container Engine and using VMs and then creating pods and having things do high scalability and stuff. So I got this bookmark that shows you how long the labs are supposed to take, so you have a bit of an idea. It's a really well done implementation for doing labs and stuff. It's pretty slick stuff.
That's awesome. So
yeah,
that's a lot of subdomains. What was that again?
It was codelabs.developers.google.com.
Cool.
And I'll have a link to it in the show notes. But yeah, I found it and immediately filtered on. I started looking at it on my phone and was like, oh my God, there's too much stuff here. And so went back to my desk. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, so I loved it. And
yeah, I'd give that a try for sure.
Yeah, that was one. And then the other one that I saw recently, which I've been wanting to play with a bit, is there's a guy named Docker Ellis. Alex Ellis, who's a Docker captain. And he's known for doing a lot of Raspberry Pi stuff with Docker. And he's got a repo up on GitHub called Docker-ARM, which is build a Docker and Swarm on an ARM software on a chip like a Raspberry Pi. And so he's got things like a section just for Docker on ARM and doing a whole like cluster of Raspberry Pis to do a Docker Swarm and stuff, which kind of plays in nice to the home automation stuff. So I thought that both of those were interesting little things I wanted to share with everyone.
Yeah, that's really cool. I have a few, I think I have like three Raspberry Pis that I could power up and get booted and do a swarm on. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. He's got a little stack, I think, of about like six or seven. Hmm. Was it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Yeah, 7 Raspberry Pis that are all stacked on top of each other is his swarm. So kind of cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, really cool.
Awesome. Well, that's everything I got for this week. You got anything else you want to share with our listeners, CJ?
No, I think that's really good. We've been talking about yapping about home automation for a little bit. I hope people got something out of this. Go check out your options. Of course, I'm biased. I'm down the Z-Wave ecosystem route, but it's really fun to play with. And if you're a coder, there's also a whole bunch of coding angle to it as well, about building automations with script and doing all that sort of stuff. So definitely go check it out.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, hey, thanks a lot. And I guess we will sync up again next week.
Sounds good.
Cheers, man. Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.keithritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show, or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.